Watch this. Here we go.
Here we go.
Here we go. Reprogram.
Charles Adler, Dean Blundell. One day. One day only.
Ah, welcome back. Nice to see everybody. Hi, my name is Dean. Still. Same name my whole life. One of those people that doesn't change their names, unlike people in the Witness Protection Program and Canadian politicians. Welcome to the program. There's the beautiful voice that I've been waiting to hear all week long. Mr. Charles Adler joins us from the Charles Adler Podcast. This is Reprogrammed, where we challenge each other's thinking and old thinking and talk about new thinking. And there's lots of new thinking going on. But to that point, you've had you're a radio guy. Your radio name, which you've adopted, Charles, we've talked about this. A long time ago, I had a first radio name. It was James Dean. It was the dumbest radio name ever.
James Dean.
Yeah, I was so stupid that I didn't give it to myself. But we watch a lot of politicians do this, specifically in Alberta. Marlena Kolodnicki is the actual name of the premier of that province. She goes by Danielle Smith. And of course, Pierre Poilievre was known as Jeff during the formative years of his life. That seems to have gone by the wayside. Not a lot of information there. Do you have a problem on its face voting for anybody that goes by a fake name? Yes or no? Yes or no?
No, because it's a brand, and I have blood on my hands. Use that expression a time or two with you. And it was my job when I was a middle manager, when I was a program director.
Yeah.
It was my job to get people acceptable names. That was the language that was used back then.
Is so that was part of your gig? Is you had to help like people with bad radio names come up with better radio names?
I had to be a tyrant about it. You're not going on the air unless you change your name, and I'll help you change your name. And I often, you know, named them. And, people go, "What are you talking about? Are you talking about the slave trade? Were you working in Charleston in the 19th century?" No, no. This was Canada, specifically in Western Canada.
Yeah,
very much in the 21st century in the. I guess the 1980s was the last time I was changing people's names. And what's that, 40, some, you know, a little over 40 years ago.
Relatively
recent, unless you're 20 years old. In that case, it's ancient history. But we would change people's names because, and I'm going to use the language that we used back then. I know that today every word is offensive to this and offensive to that, so I'm just going to speak English here. The word was ethnic. If you had an ethnic name, in other words, if it wasn't an Anglo-Saxon name, because that's why Pierre Poilievre at one point said something about the language he uses is
plain Anglo-Saxon language.
Anglo-Saxon.
Yeah.
That was the word we used back then, that it had to be an Anglo-Saxon name.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there was, and I'm not going to mention the name of the person because I'm not wanting to embarrass them, and they're still in the business. But I remember changing a certain young woman's name, and her dad was absolutely livid, not with her, but with me. And it was nasty. I mean, you know, her dad just wanted to, you know, get out the shotgun and do what they do to varmints in Western Canada. As far as he was concerned, I was a varmint because I was changing his daughter's last name, which of course was his last name, which was his grandfather's last name.
Source of pride. Yeah.
So I was mucking with the heritage, but it just, the name was unacceptable. And oddly enough, years later, when she had certainly had the opportunity to go back to using her own name, she didn't do that. So, you know, to give you the long answer to the short question, because I have blood on my hands and I have changed people's names to give their name a more acceptable brand, something that's easier to pronounce for the overwhelming majority of listeners or viewers. If Jeff wanted to change his name to Pierre, I could care less. I think when I met him, he wasn't Jeff. He was definitely Pierre, because I vaguely remember, you know, shaking hands with him and talking to him for a few minutes. He was considered a wunderkind in political science at the University of Calgary, and I was doing a lot of shows out of Calgary, and that's where I met him, and that's where I met Danielle Smith. Now, Danielle Smith, we actually put on the air, put on the TV show. I don't think we put Pierre Poilievre on the air, but I talked to him for a little bit, And I just felt I was talking to a robot. And I think that's one of the reasons why, I mean, an intelligent robot. I'm not saying he was not, he's definitely not a stupid person. I'm never going to call him that. He was a smart person. As I say, he was a wunderkind. He was one of the top of the class. And that's why I met him and some other people. But
how long ago was that? How long ago did you meet him?
I'll tell you specifically when that was. That would have been just after 9/11. So that would have been either 2001 or probably 2002. So do the math. I met him 22 years ago, and I was impressed with his brain, his natural brain. He was very, very smart, very brainy, but he had what I would call a difficult personality. And the most obvious aspect of his personality was zero empathy. And so I tend, and I'm wrong from time to time.
Even back then, 22 years ago, just from a conversation, he was just an automaton.
He was someone who was terrific at memorizing. Yeah. He was great at memorizing lines. That was obvious. But it was very artificial. It was very robotic, very no empathy. And sometimes in this life, I have made the mistake of thinking that people who have no empathy are not going to be successful at being public brands. You know, faking empathy is really difficult. Some people say things like, "Oh, you know, I did. You know, once you can fake empathy, 90% of the rest of the journey is downhill." It's very, very difficult over a long period of time to fake empathy. I did not know that someday we would be living in an era where people actually enjoy cruelty, coldness, frigidity, an Arctic personality. I had no idea that someday we'd be living in 2024, and 2024 would be a year where it's perfectly acceptable for a public figure to be either lacking in empathy or certainly appearing to be lacking empathy. And he makes his bones by trashing the other side. And when he does trash the other side, specifically when he trashes the prime minister, nobody has a hard time believing that he has 100% disdain for the prime minister, because the truth is this person has 100% disdain for anyone who isn't marching alongside him, preferably from his perspective, behind him. That's the impression I have of Pierre Poilievre. And so my impression really hasn't changed in 22 years. Call me old-fashioned, but I believe my instincts.
Your instincts, are based on not just words that you've spoken with the gentleman, but the works of this individual, and you've known him and met him 22 years ago. Makes it kind of all the more disconcerting that we are where we are, 19 points up in most polls, between 18 and 20 points, stands to win a majority in this country. And it's some of the questions that I think a lot of people are asking today, Chuck. And I think, you know, it goes a long way to have someone like you that, as you point out, has blood on your hands. You know the people, but you also know what's at stake. You know, there's this competing narrative from individuals in this country, the average voter, that, you know, you get to choose between nice and not nice, good and evil, right? Canada's institutions are as such that I'm not necessarily overly concerned for my safety if a guy like Pierre Poilievre becomes the prime minister, but I've seen nothing from him that would make me feel comfortable with him as the leader of this country representing us, because he said nothing about what he's going to be doing for the people of this country. Just that if you keep voting for Justin Trudeau, your life is going to be over. Your kids are going to turn gay, all those beautiful tropes and slogans that, you know, MAGA and Maple MAGA like to repeat. But right. That's the question I would ask, and I think a good place to start. Sure. You know this individual. You know the disingenuous attitude, the lack of empathy. You see how unpalatable that is just when we see him on television reciting something, going after a reporter, basing reputations of institutions, media institutions, Canadian institutions. Are you concerned? Like, I know I've asked you that question before, but do you think that he wants to make radical changes? Do you think that Canada will become like Trump 2016 through 20, or do you think that this is just ballyhoo? Do you think this is just posturing for votes, money?
I tend not to get scared of changes in our democracy, because I believe strongly in our institutions. So I think we have safeguards. I think we have guardrails. I also don't think he's that serious a person. he is serious about becoming prime minister. He's serious about doing the gig. He loves all of the trappings. That's why I laugh at some of this populist stuff that he does. Every now and then he gets caught out, like he'll call sort of a lower middle class home. He'll call it a shack because from his perspective, it's just a shack. Mm-hmm. And then he tries to go back to being a man of the common people and all that kind of stuff. So I believe he wants the trappings. I believe he wants the gig. I believe he wants the perks. I believe he wants to be on the world stage and all of that. But do I believe that he is a radical and wants a radical transformation of Canada to be that kind of, you know, really consequential figure? He redid Canada. No, I don't believe.
You don't think he wants to turn Canada into an authoritarian state?
No. I think when his political opponents say that, I think they end up jumping the shark. I think that they actually help him more than hinder him. I think that if they want to beat him, they should talk about specifics that he might want to do. He might want to trash childcare. He might want to diversify healthcare, privatize a lot of it, and that plays differently in different precincts in this country, yeah, in different neighborhoods, with different demographics. But I think if they want to talk about the specifics that he would happily get rid of, that's fine. But if they want to tell people that he wants to turn Canada into Putin's Russia, I think that's interesting stuff for podcasting, for opinion columns, for Twitter. But I think it's a load of trash.
Again, next question, because I don't disagree with you. I think a lot of the rhetoric or talking points, especially when you've got extreme rhetoric that breathes nothing but fear into large groups of people, right? It's psyop stuff. It's alternative reality stuff. And that's how you create an alternative reality. You convince a group of rubes that things are a certain way. And, you know, it happens from both sides. To your point, Pierre Polyev did it. Andrew Coyne called it out. You put out a tweet about it as well. But this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Like, you know, being able to gin up votes with legitimate bullshit. And he's been doing it for some time. That's the wrong thing. We'll get to Navalny in a second. Yeah. Polyev puts out the front page of Post Media, National Post, which is firmly a conservatively funded newspaper.
Yeah, and by the way, when you say that, or I say, or others say that, folks, that's not an opinion. That's a fact. They are proud to be the most widely read platform of movement conservatives in this country. There's no way that I could have any of that. I know a bunch of them, just like I know a bunch of Polyev's crew. I could put any one of them on the air, and not one of them are on a podcast, and not one of them would deny that they see themselves as a platform for movement conservatism. They reject the idea that they're a tool of Polyev, but they certainly don't reject the idea that they are a voice of Canadian conservatism.
No, and they proudly do it. It is a vertical in what they do. It is how they get funding. They hire conservative-leaning operatives or journalists. We all know that. That's what Post Media does. That's what they're all about, The Sun, The National Post, et cetera. So thank you for saying that. Polyev puts out a screen cap of a tweet. Adam Pankratz, one of the conservative journalists, saying anti-road Guilbeault drives down the slippery slope to climate tyranny. The environment minister wants Canada to deindustrialize. Now, this is over him saying that Canada wasn't going to put a bunch of money into some new road infrastructure. So then they take that, they gaslight, they run. And Pierre Polyev feeds the conspiracy to the masses. Justin Trudeau's radical environment. Everybody's radical. I love it. Mr. Slogan.
The word where it works.
Yeah, it really does. Trudeau's radical environment minister decisions to end road building is part of a plan to deindustrialize. Again, another fucking catchphrase and slogan. Deindustrialize. Radical minister. Deindustrialize Canada. We're going back to the dark ages. Make us reliant on foreign dictatorships to sell things to our government to ban us from making home. I had no idea you were reduced to just working with foreign dictatorships if you're going to deindustrialize. But okay. To stop Trudeau's no more roads plans, sign up here and give us some money.
Yeah.
Is that what it's all about?
That's what it's about, because, Andrew Coyne calls them rubes, you know, just a nice term for people who are low information. That's another, I guess, politically correct term that we use, a word.
Oh, you call, yeah, you call them something else. I call them idiots. Yeah.
A word that's less, a little more to the point is ignorant or people who want to, who choose to be ignorant. I've said this a million times. Many of the people who love this stuff, who lap it up, are not ignorant people. They're successful people and they're educated people, but they love hating on Trudeau. And if someone wants to come along and say that Trudeau has a hidden agenda to, you know, send us to the dark ages, you know, we'll just be walking everywhere. I love hearing people repeat that stuff in Western Canada, because you know, like in Manitoba where I live, most people either have a cottage or have a friend who has a cottage, and going to the cottage is a very big deal in the summer because winters are rather rugged in Western Canada. And so the idea of walking to the cottage, walking to 200 kilometers is kind of, I mean, it's just funny. I mean, I have to laugh about it.
Me too. I mean, you know, like go to the 15-minute city thing, anything they can glom onto to say, this is going to happen to you. You're going to have a terrible time. You know, the 15-minute city thing that they rallied around, that conservatives, Pierre Poilievre, everybody. And they told people what their fate would be if,
but you're in TO where, you know, I lived, you know, for certain parts of my life, I guess overall, I lived in the, you know, greater Toronto area for at least a dozen years, did several tours of duty there. And one of the things that I didn't like about Toronto is I was very spoiled. In Montreal, the cottage was an hour away. And in Toronto, the cottage was 3 hours away and 4 hours away. 5 hours away. I didn't like that. Of course, in Western Canada, the cottage can be anywhere from 40 minutes away to 3 hours away. But the thing is that most Canadians do love going to cottage country. And the idea that we'll give up on cars, we're not walking to the cottage. So the point is, it's stupid. Yeah. It's stupid in Quebec.
But
it's
people buy it, dude. Like, that's the thing. People are like, they're seriously going to have to hand out permits to us for us to go get groceries, and we're not allowed to own a car. That's the way.
Anyway, the whole thing is stupid. But people who want to hate on the other side, who aren't necessarily stupid, they love this stupid stuff that Poilievre is selling, and Andrew Coyne, you know, said it right. You know, hey, Rubes, I got a pile of conspiracy theory nonsense for you.
Yeah. Sorry, wrong tweet again. Attention, Rubes, use conspiracy theories on sale now. All makes, all models, just send money. You know, and it's funny because like 3 years ago, I would have gone, what is that? Like, what an irresponsible thing to do. And now when I see it, I'm like, you and Coyne, where I'm like, oh yeah, here we go. That's a good one. You can only laugh at it, right? Like, if you understand the end result, what's been beginning up.
Just like I can't take seriously the idea that a Liberal government, whether it's run by Trudeau or anyone else, would actually stop building roads, because I've never met the politician who didn't love building roads, because it's always a popular vote getter. You cut the ribbon, you open the road, it's a very big deal. You get the lead story on the 6 o'clock news. You know, there might be a tornado coming through town that might get ahead of you, but unless there is a tornado, an earthquake, some kind of blizzard, some kind of important weather event, you are the lead story on the 6 o'clock local news when you cut the ribbon to a brand new bridge, a brand new road, brand new piece of infrastructure that always, always, always requires fossil fuel vehicles to be used. So Stephen Guilbeault represents nothing. I mean, he represents a sliver of humanity. I had no idea why Trudeau wants to have him on as minister. It's a joke. Blague. That's a joke in French. It's a blague in English. It's a blague in French. It's just ridiculous. I've said before on different shows that Stephen Guilbeault, the environment minister, is Santa Claus every day for Pierre Poilievre. Even if Poilievre didn't have a personality, even if he didn't have a digital crew, even if he didn't have anything going on, all he'd have to do is quote Stephen Guilbeault every week and say, this is the hidden agenda of the Liberal government. And if the Liberal government wants to stop having Stephen Guilbeault as the hidden agenda target, they could just fire him and replace him with a fire hydrant, because a fire hydrant would do a better job than Stephen Guilbeault, who's a wonderful activist, and he's an expert at climate change, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what the hell does that have to do with the price of peas? What the hell does that have to do with retail politics? Stephen Guilbeault is useless at retail politics, and I would say that in English, French, Hungarian, whatever language I have access to. And like I say, I don't want to sit here and pretend that Stephen Guilbeault has any real power, that Stephen Guilbeault is going to, you know, stop the trains from running on time and stop roads from being built and stop Canada from being Canada. And if some conservative wants to come along and say, oh, no, Trudeau is really into this, you got to walk everywhere. Like, yeah, like Trudeau doesn't fly planes, you know, every day. Like Trudeau doesn't get into fossil fuel vehicles every day to get where he wants. Oh, no, Trudeau's going to change his whole life and become some backpacking green activist. I mean, yeah. It's just nonsense. But the nonsense gets clicks and dollars.
Yep, clicks, dollars, fear. That's the whole point. The Dean Blundell Show is brought to you by FactCheck.io. FactCheck.io, makers of the world's most comprehensive fact-checking software, that have been very busy building some software so that you can fact check anything that you read. It doesn't matter if it's got a URL, you'll be able to fact check it. Alternative sources, origins, whether or not it was an organic or inorganic campaign, whether or not you can trust the people that are putting out the information so that you can give yourself agency over information in the age of disinformation. Again, want to beta test their product? They're going to launch it in the next month or two. Go to factcheck.io today. FactCheck.io. Back to the show. Alexei Navalny was murdered this week by Vladimir Putin. The response from different corners of the world, depending on, you know, their political stripes, what they align with, has been different. First, your thoughts on Navalny's death, and then we'll get to some of the Canadian responses today and what it kind of means. You know, I never, like, if you've watched the Navalny documentary, and I watched it prior to his death, I'm like, there's no way Putin can kill this guy because the entire country will, like, literally go nuts if they do. And that was sort of Navalny's plan. His plan was to be as public as he possibly could to make it impossible for Putin or anybody from the FSB or in his inner circle to take him out. He actually said that prior to his death. That's what he thought would work. His family thought, well, no, it didn't work. He was murdered in an Arctic prison, I think 200 miles north of Moscow, at the age of 47. His only real political opponent has now been taken out. So I want to just get your precursor thoughts, and then we'll get to some of the reaction.
So he was likely poisoned. He had been poisoned before unsuccessfully this time. There's no doubt that he was poisoned successfully because overall his overall health was fine. He was 47 years old. So he was likely poisoned under, you know, orders from Putin and his cronies in the Kremlin. And that's why when someone says he was murdered, I don't think you have to have a trial to declare this. And if you want to be absolutely technically correct, you don't have to say he was murdered. You can say that the Putin administration, the Putin dictatorship, or the Putin government, if you choose to put it that way, is responsible for the death of Navalny. He was likely poisoned, and that's why they're not releasing the body. It's going to take a few weeks for the poison to not be traceable. At the moment, of course, it would be. And they don't want any coroner, they don't want anyone who they don't absolutely trust looking at that body and doing the autopsy, etc. So his mother is not allowed. His mother is begging Putin to have access to the body of her late son.
Yeah, did you see her video that she put out?
Yeah. So that's what's going on in Russia. And, of course, what's going on in the U.S. and Canada and the U.K. is members of the right, some want to call them the far right, but Members of the right still want to carry water for Putin and his propaganda, and so they don't know what to say about Navalny. They say ridiculous things. I mean, Trump said the most ridiculous thing the other day. Trump said that he is Navalny, that he is being treated by Joe Biden and the Democrats, that that he's being treated the way Navalny was treated by Putin. I mean, I don't like to use the word offensive because everybody uses it all the time. So I'll just say hideous. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely hideous for me as a small D Democrat, as an embracer of Canadian democracy, small L liberal democracy anywhere in the world. And that's what Navalny stood for, to have someone like Trump, who at one time was the most powerful human being on the planet, say that he is being treated like Alexei Navalny. It's gross. Now, as far as why Putin is so popular with certain members of the right, it has absolutely nothing to do with Navalny, nothing to do with the Gulag of Siberia poisoning the enemies. That's not what it is. Putin is the latest poster boy for what is sometimes politely called Christian nationalism. Mm. Now, in my opinion, the Christianity has nothing to do with it in the sense of, you know, if you ask the question, what would Jesus do? I don't think Jesus would see Putin as a righteous figure. But there is an element of, let's call it Orthodox, really strict Orthodox Christianity or fundamentalist Christianity that really likes Putin, at least followers of fundamentalist and Orthodox Christianity like him, because he's white. Mm-hmm. And virtually all of his colleagues are white. Virtually all of his colleagues are white male. And they're homophobic, and there are a whole lot of other things that appeal to people who are Orthodox Christians or to leaders of various Orthodox Christian movements. And so the polite term, I guess, is Christian nationalism. Mm-hmm. Those conservatives in the States and elsewhere who think of themselves as Christian nationalists are the ones who don't just want to outlaw abortion. If they had their druthers, they would outlaw birth control pills. They would outlaw, you know, women being able to burst through the glass ceiling. They would mm-hmm. want to go back to the 19th century. That's what Putin represents symbolically for so many of them. And that's, I think, at the core, the reason they support him. They don't care about Navalny. They don't care about democracy. They don't care about Siberia. They don't even care about dictatorship, really. They just want to figure out how to have a country that has white males large and in charge.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. echoed by the plight of the Feenstra family, by the way. If you remember, this gentleman moved his entire family. We talked about him last week. Talked about him on the podcast yesterday. His name's Aaron Feenstra. Moved from Ontario, family of 10, the oldest child, stayed home because he is an Orthodox Christian nationalist who believes that Russia was the place for him and his family. So he literally sold everything, moved over there. Now, there's an update. You can go to Cryer Media, get the update on this story. Massive story. And the update is that the Feenstras, as soon as they got there, had every dollar they had in their Canadian bank account transferred into a Russian bank account and cannot access it, cannot buy food, cannot literally put out a video last week complaining about what's going on. Him and his wife was livid, basically said they've been lied to. Yesterday, Mr. Feenstra put out an 18-minute long rambling video, which you can check out at Cryer Media. Of him effectively, and you would know this as a guy that understands compromat, is effectively going, okay, listen, I think our thoughts were misconstrued. Russia is a great place. I love Russia. My family loves Russia, 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 Russia. It's not the bank's fault. It's our fault. It's everybody else's fault, not just ours. It's nobody else's fault. Russia's the best. Putin's the best. It went on for 18 minutes. Went on for 18 minutes. And at the end of it, it was fascinating because he's like, by the way, we're going to introduce everybody to a whole bunch of people that came from the West that are now here in Russia because they stand up for real Christian values. Oh, by the way, here's a picture of my daughter celebrating her first birthday in Russia. That was the video. Now, all the videos they put out with all their struggles have disappeared from the internet, right? So that's the freedom that they get. That's what they're supporting. And there's literally like this like catfishing exercise going on from Russia. And it's part of the propaganda, which is fascinating to me, to bring people from Western democracies into their country, promise them a bunch of stuff, get them to make videos on their channels and sanitize those videos and have those pushed back out to make it look like what, to your point, this is the motherland for Christian nationalism, for that Orthodox. And I'm not talking about Christians. You and I know a bunch of Christians. I come from a Christian family. There are wonderful Christian people out there who don't have this crazy, hateful, Orthodox bent. There are lots of them. These are the extremes of the extremes.
Yeah, just so we're clear, the overwhelming majority of Christians are not like this at all. But people who are like this at all, they're the ones who lead with Christian, Christian, Christian. I mean, that's what their whole life is about. And they give, let's just say it clearly, they give Christians a bad name.
Terrible name. And you can say the same thing about other Abrahamic faiths too, and different derivatives and denominations of it, is that extreme version misrepresents the whole. To that point, the misrepresentation of what Russia is, that gets echoed here as well. Some of the talking points that we see from people pushing back against, you know, in the case of the Conservative Party of Canada, and to loop them back into this conversation, voting against aid for Ukraine definitely helps Russia. Mike Lee in the United States holding up aid for Ukraine definitely helps Russia. As always, the Dean Blundell Show is brought to you by our friends at factcheck.io. Factcheck.io. Do you believe? The good people at FactCheck are a quorum of software professionals, psychological professionals, journalists that have been very busy building some software so that you can fact check anything that you read. It doesn't matter if it's got a URL, you'll be able to fact check it. Alternative sources, origins, whether or not it was an organic or inorganic campaign, whether or not you can trust the people that are putting out the information, and alternative sources. And there's going to be a weapon button too, where you can turn that information around and put it back out there accurately to combat disinformation. The good people at factcheck.io are right now testing their beta version of their free program. Yes, it will be free for anybody who wants to use it. They want to battle disinformation because it is a problem. Go to factcheck.io today. FACTCHEK.io. FACTCHEK.io. The world's most robust fact-checking disinformation software for news, social media, video, print, anything spoken word. These people are on the tip. And they use some of the finest software technology to be able to give you the advantage when it comes to getting agency back in your life, when it comes to information that you read. Go to factcheck.io today for more information. Sign up for the beta test, FACTCHEK.io. Back to the Navalny thing, if I can tie these things in. Pierre Poilievre's statement after Navalny was murdered, to your point about death and murder, largely feckless. And I want to read it to you, and I want Charles Adler's interpretation of what he sees here, Charles. This is his official statement. This is, of course, the same gentleman aligns, and his party aligns with the same ideological bent of, you know, radical gender ideology, trans people are no good, we need to do this, we got the same thing. He repeats and stands for the same thing Russia stands for, whether it's the convoy, whether it's disrupting democracy in this country, whether it's hate-filled trolls and bots, they all support each other. So his comment on the Navalny death, the murder, was, quote, Russian opposition Alexei Navalny has died in prison. Putin imprisoned Navalny for the act of opposing the regime. Conservatives condemn Putin for his death. Your thoughts, because he's getting dragged by a bunch of people. It is a statement, but in statements, there aren't many people that can read into those statements better than you, and I'd love to get your thoughts on it.
Well, I've got to tell you that it's still a lot better than what Poilievre or whoever writes the tweets, whatever they put out, whatever the Conservative Party of Canada put out there, is a lot better, a lot closer to accuracy and honesty than what Trump put out. You know, Trump mentioned Navalny and then told the whole world that he was a Navalny, and he showed absolutely no sympathy to Navalny, no sympathy for democracy, and there was no attack on Putin. So this particular tweet, they are linking Putin to the death of Navalny. Did they say that Putin murdered Navalny? No, but they certainly in this tweet say that he is responsible for it. They certainly say why he was imprisoned. I mean, could Poilievre have gone farther? With what democracy is about, and that's what Navalny was about, and that Putin is a threat to democracy, and that Putin is a threat to democracy all over the world because of all the disinformation that Putin subsidizes and supports. Yeah, he could have done all those things. He didn't. But as I say, in a world where we look at, you know,
why didn't he,
relativity relative to Donald Trump, if liberals want to say that Poilievre did exactly what Donald Trump would do, that would be inaccurate because we know what Donald Trump did, and Donald Trump did nothing.
But why wouldn't he, in a country like Canada, why wouldn't he go all the way with a comment? Why wouldn't he say he was murdered? You can say Putin, you can hold him accountable, but you can arrow down to, you know, accountable because you're the president and it shouldn't have happened under your watch. But like a political dissident, a political opponent in a country of people that he shares a lot of ideological supporters with.
Yeah. Well, because
murdered a dude, and he was like, it happens.
Well, the answer is answer's inside everything else we've just talked about. Poilievre doesn't want to piss off the fundamentalist Christians, Orthodox Christians, homophobic Christians, whatever you want to call them. He doesn't want to piss off the people who support that family who's trapped inside Russia right now. because call them what you will. You know, you can call them rubes. You can call them all kinds of things. But Polyev calls them donors. And he wants the donors. He wants wants the money. And it doesn't matter whether the guy's name is Pierre Polyev or Stephen Harper. The conservative leaders have wanted to gain as much money as possible. They always outraise everyone else. They do much more and they do much better at raising money. One of the reasons they raise a lot more money is they go after people like this, people who follow these conspiracies and want to see themselves as Christian nationalists, and those people contribute. Because those people feel that no other party ever courts them, wants them, embraces them, honors them, affirms them. And so the conservatives are their party. So they spend lots of money. And whether, like I say, whether it's Stephen Harper or Pierre Polyev, they've always wanted to have lots of money because they want to have lots of money to spend on advertising, what some people call negative ads, hit ads on the liberals. You're going to see, you know, you've seen the massive amount of social media advertising. But that's a drop in the ocean of the amounts of money that will be spent next year or later this year, but certainly in the next 12 to 18 months on the next election. And the ads will be graphic. They will be, yes, they'll be creative. They will be absolutely vicious, and they will be buying lots of them. You'll see Stanley Cup playoff games where you'll see a conservative ad coming up every 10 minutes or 12 minutes. And it might be the same ad, might be the same vicious ad, but those things cost a lot of money, and that's why they're raising the money. The conservatives are very good at it. I can say a lot of things about the conservatives from a moral perspective, from a business, pure business point of view, the business of politics. The conservatives are absolutely number one at doing the business of politics, and all this stuff that we're talking about right now feeds into their business. Pierre Polyev is not losing any support, not losing any dollars, not losing any clicks by not going farther on the Navalny thing. If I were consulting the conservatives, knowing exactly who they're after, what they're after, what their long-term goals are, I would have written a tweet no more fulsome than the one they wrote for him.
Okay. Yeah. Listen, there are a lot of people that are carving him, saying he didn't go far enough. There are a lot of people that are like, he said enough. It doesn't really matter. But inside, the reasoning behind the problem that you might have with what he said, you can kind of, you know, ascertain bias, right? You can say, well, he did this because, you know, this is my guy, or he didn't do enough because he's not my guy. And to your point, I don't disagree with you. Like, you know, I look at it from a perspective of values, though, right? When a political opponent of a murderous dictator, theocratic dictator, who's at war with the free world, at war with democracy, who's openly meddling in North American elections and politics, I look at it like, if you're a Canadian politician who stands to ascend to the prime minister's office, and it looks like he might, you would want to give your constituents, whether or not they were going to vote for you, possibly independence, you'd want to give them the comfort of being able to say, I categorically stand against the murder of political opponents in any country because I'm a political opponent here and I don't want that to come to our shores. That is the statement I'm looking for as a Canadian citizen, if I don't have the bias I have and know that the guy has the values of a serial killer, if I was just an average voter, right? So that's my issue with it, and but it's here, a personal issue.
Okay, but here's what you need to know, and here's what everyone, I think, listening to this podcast needs to know. The Conservative Party in general, the leadership of the Conservative Party, feels that one of the things that makes the Liberals vulnerable to defeat is the Liberals have been hectoring and lecturing and moralizing for a decade now. And they feel that most Canadians don't want to be hectored, moralized to, lectured to. They don't want sermons from the mount. They don't want Justin Trudeau to be delivering those sermons. They don't want anyone else to deliver them. That's how the Conservatives feel about the Liberals, and that's how they feel about Canadians. So the less moralizing Pierre Polyev, or it's not Pierre Polyev, doesn't write his tweets. I mean, the less moralizing they do, the conservatives do on these tweets, the better it is for them. That's how they see it. And as I say, they're playing the game of politics better than anyone else right now. You may object to the game. I may object to the game, but I'm never going to come to this microphone and this camera denying what I know.
Yeah. Distraction. It's a distraction that works. It's, I mean, and they're masterful at it. And you know what? It's funny because I look at a lot of the issues that get put in front of us, fear porn issues, right? Calling people radical, calling this radical, calling that guy a tyrant, calling this guy a dictator. And I used to be like everybody else probably about 5-6 years ago where you're like, is this guy an idiot? Like, are you serious? And then I take umbrage to it. You go through the phases of like disbelief in Canadian politics that this kind of stuff, pure out and out lies could happen, pure out and out bullshit, like graphs and memes that are wholly untrue and rage baiting and the fighting and the gaslight, all that other stuff. And, you know, for a long time, we in Canada really were like, man, I'm jealous of American elections. They're so exciting and there's so much content. There's so many affairs and there's so much espionage. It's so much more entertaining. And then I look at Donald Trump's 4 years and I'm like, man, that was like content in the can for people for a long period of time. With a guy like Pierre Poilievre, am I disingenuous or is it bad for Canada for me to say, hey, listen, if Pierre Poilievre wins, knowing the content of his character, this might be the most entertaining 4 years in political media in this country ever if he gets in?
Well, I think a lot of people who are in public media, and by public media, I just mean, you know, media that is servicing the public. It doesn't matter whether it's CBC or CTV or any others, broadcasters, podcasters. There are many people who are looking forward to being in a country that's governed by Pierre Poilievre because many of them feel it's going to be a clown show. Many feel some of his cabinet ministers are clowns, and they're going to be giving you know, the media a lot of fodder, and the media is, you know, bored of the liberals. I love hearing all of this nonsense from my conservative friends about how the media is in tank with the liberals. All that's nonsense. You know, read the pages of any of the newspapers. Listen to most of the comments that come from most media people all across the country. I mean, the idea that these people are all in a tank with Justin Trudeau is ridiculous. Yeah. Most of them are like a lot of other people. They're bored with a certain style, a certain governance for almost a decade. Most people feel that we've had a liberal decade. And a lot of media people are looking forward to the clown show. A lot of people in Canadian media are envious of those in American media who had the 4-year clown show of
You can sell more Trump. Streams, you can sell more newspapers, more clicks when you've got people, a legitimate clown in office.
More people will pay attention to the government if the government is a little more clownish. I mean, you know, the problem with Stephen Guilbeault, I mean, I said earlier, Stephen Guilbeault, the environment minister, is Santa Claus for Pierre Poilievre every day. But Stephen Guilbeault is a really boring individual. You know, he just is. The guess is that the individuals that Pierre Poilievre will have in cabinet will be intellectual lightweights for the most part, but they won't be boring. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if your friend, I mean, I just think of her as Karen because
Michelle Ferrari.
Yeah. Michelle Ferrari. I mean, I don't doubt that Michelle Ferrari from the Peterborough area will be in the Poilievre cabinet if Pierre Poilievre forms government. And Michelle Ferrari is Santa Claus for the media, not just every day, every hour.
To your point, here's Michelle Ferrari's latest video. She's a sitting member of parliament.
Yeah.
She might be a minister. She has no idea. Dude, she has no idea how the different federal and provincial levels of government work.
Yeah.
Let's watch this together, shall we?
And she.
So this is Ryan Moore. And if any of you are connected to politics locally, you know that Ryan Moore seeked the Conservative nomination. Sought.
PC.
Why don't you say Conservative?
Because it's different. One's provincial, one's federal.
One calls themselves PCs and one calls themselves Conservatives?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Different leadership, different, yeah.
But it's still the same party.
No. No, it's not.
What?
No, they're two separate.
So you're telling me the provincial Liberals are different than the federal Liberals?
Yeah. And NDP, and well, NDP's culture, but no, they're separate.
How so?
That's why they selected a leader last night, the federal Conservatives.
How so? How are they different?
Everything's different about it. Some of the policies. people, like a lot of the same membership sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not. The writings weren't always the same.
I did not know that.
Yeah, there is no federal minister of education, but if there was, Michelle Ferrari, CPC MP in the Peterborough area, she would be the minister of education. Now, if she were provincial, right? If she were an MPP, lucky I spent all this time in Ontario because I don't call them MLAs. You see, a lot of my Western Canadian friends, when they, you know, when it's a provincial representative in Ontario, they'll say an Ontario MLA. No. Yeah. Ontario, they're MPPs. It's like in Newfoundland, I think they're MNAs. I think
yes,
they're member of the National Assembly. Anyway,
yes.
So if Michelle Ferrari was provincial, a provincial conservative, a Ford conservative, as it were, she'd be a provincial MPP. And if she were running provincially, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see her as the Minister of Education. I don't know what the ministry she would have in a Poilievre government, but I have zero doubt that with her communication skills, she would be maybe not a senior minister, but a minister, and the media would just eat it up because every day Michelle Ferrari would give them a juicy red apple.
Oh, Charles, you couldn't have said it better. I see, and people are like deathly afraid. I know there are a lot of people in the content game that are like, you know, 12 bell alert, Michelle Ferrari might be the minister of something. And I'm like, oh, please. Like, you can't sneak that one by me. It's like, hey, listen, there's upside here, too. If Pierre Poilievre wins, you guys might be angry and he might do some dumb shit. And he guaranteed will do some dumb shit on the international and domestic stage. And we'll all laugh. Ha ha ha. But that woman is a sitting member of parliament, had no idea how the different levels of provincial and federal government, didn't know that they were separate entities, and is literally being schooled by her live-in boyfriend at the time because he ran for the Conservatives. And the look on his face, like when she must have gotten elected that night a couple of years ago, must have been spectacular, because this woman has no clue how any of it works. And she walks around. And this is the thing that I love about politics in 2024. She's got that Boebert energy, that MGT energy, right? Or MTG energy, where it's like, rah, 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 rah. She literally, under the surface, has no idea how her industry works. Like, none.
I think you meant MTG, Marjorie Taylor Greene, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Okay.
Marjorie Taylor Greene in Georgia, she still thinks that she's eligible to be the vice president if Donald Trump is president. And Marjorie Taylor Greene probably isn't quite as dumb as she appears in videos, but, you know, she's no Einstein. And Marjorie Taylor Greene raises more money than just about anybody on earth, because the people who send her money, and they send her money from all over the United States, not just Georgia, they relate to her. You know, she is one of them. And, you know, nobody will ever accuse Marjorie Taylor Greene of talking down to anybody.
Yeah,
you can't be that low on the ground and talk down to people. But, you know, even though that sounds elitist and snobbish on my part, from the perspective of a lot of people who are in part of that kind of that populist convoy, and they would see me as elitist and snobbish and Laurentian elite and whatever the silly slogans are. Mm-hmm. But they love the Marjorie Taylor Greens, and there's no doubt in my mind they love the Michelle Ferrari. She's real, man. She's real. Man.
She doesn't get more real than that. That's why Doug Ford's got that folksy love in this province, right? It's like, the guy could be a total criminal, but yeah, he's just this folksy idiot. You got to keep him in office. Like,
having spent so many years in Ontario, there's another. I mean, it's one of the things that delights me about life. And I know you feel that it's not fair that I'm being mercenary, but I mean, I know Ontario like the back of my hand, and the idea that Doug Ford is still a smashing success. I mean, I find it hilarious.
Oh, without question. But nobody looks at it through this humorous lens, right? Okay. People look at it through this fatal critical lens, like, oh my God, this is going to be, oh my God. Listen, in Ontario, is shit more expensive? Totally. Do I love this province? Absolutely. Is Doug Ford still robbing the province blind and total a criminal? Yes. Is he really, really intellectually stupid and dishonest? 100%. But dude, you got to look around the room. Like, Michelle Ferrari, literally, we just played it for her. She's like, wait a second. Like, that's how that works. Like, I don't know. She is getting an MP salary, and she's a federal leader. People use the word right honorable in front of Michelle Ferrari when they introduce her. That right honorable woman has no idea how her industry works. I just played it for her. She's like, wait a second. So like the progressive
I would kill. I mean, the conversation with boyfriend is yeah. interesting, but I would kill to watch a 30-minute video of Ford and Ferrari, right?
Yeah.
Michelle Ferrari and Doug Ford trading
electoral reform ideas.
And I know that, you know, some Western Canadians will get a little ticked if I say this, but I have to say this. Some of the smartest people in the world do live in Toronto. I know people want to hate on Toronto, but Toronto, whether it's the universities, whether it's the tech community, the business community, the manufacturing community, you know, Toronto has some of the smartest people in the world. And I've been privileged in my life to meet many of them. And that's why when I look at Doug Ford, and most of them do vote for Doug Ford. You know, I mean, they do. And they don't vote for him because they think he's smart. They vote PC. Yes. And when I was in Ontario, I too voted PC. For all I know, if I were in Ontario right now, once again, blood on my hands. If I were in Ontario right now, I guess the chances are high that I too would vote
PC.
I can't even say it.
Dude, it is incredibly entertaining out here. Like, to your point, federally, we have that provincially.
Yeah.
And yet, like, at the start of the week, folks, just relax, okay? Like, if Pierre Poilievre wins, this is what you're going to get. Yeah. You get a precursor here in Ontario. The guy had to walk back every single bill he tried to institute over the past year on Monday after taking an 11-week vacation because he's under criminal investigation by the RCMP for international collusion and money laundering. So, like, folks, if you're sitting there going, this is an outrage, enjoy the reporting on the outrage, people. Like, just relax. We are governed by absolute morons. And it can be fun, too. So everybody enjoy it. If Pierre Poilievre wins, Minister of Education for Michelle Ferrari sounds like a lovely title. Lovely.
Anyway, Michelle Ferrari will not be the Minister of Education because even though Michelle doesn't know it, she's a federal member.
She doesn't know it. She didn't. She didn't in that conversation. She didn't even know who she worked for. She's like, wait a second.
Pierre Poilievre is famous for asking, who are you? Who do you work for? At these so-called news conferences. I still laugh myself silly about that because
when he asks who you are, because he goes by a different name and no one knows who he is or where he's from. It's the best.
You can't attend any of those news conferences
unless
you're accredited. The idea that he doesn't know who these people are, it's not like it's the U.S. Marine Corps. We're not talking about thousands of people there. We're talking about a handful of people. He knows every one of them, and he knows who they work for. He just wants to hear lines like CBC or CBC or CP, and then he goes into his, our tax dollars are subsidizing you. You're speaking for Trudeau. And all of these reporters are way too polite to respond to his question with, who are you?
Yeah. Someone does, to your point. I wrote an article on that last week.
Who are you and who do you work for?
Who do you really work for? Actually, there's the question, Pierre.
Yeah.
I'd like to turn it around. Who are you? Why did you used to be called Jeff? And who do you really work for, bud?
Yeah.
Let me know. Charles Adler, ladies and gentlemen. Charles Adler podcast. You can download anywhere you get your fine podcasts. Google, Apple, Spotify. You can also go to YouTube, Cryer Media. You can download it there as well. You can follow him on Twitter at Charles Adler. Very funny follow. And also, he'll be your conscience. He's one of those guys, he's like a Twitter handrail where you're like, I'm going to tweet this. And then you go and see what Charles tweeted. And you're like, I might want to dial it back. Maybe that's just me. But really appreciate you being here to kind of make some sense, have some fun, talk a little bit about where we're at. And thanks again. Really appreciate you having some time with us.
One question to throw out to Pierre Poilievre for any reporter who gets asked, who do you work for? Here's how you respond. If you just want to tickle his fancy, as it were. Ask the question this way. Sir, you know who I work for. My question is, do you work for Venezuela?
He's in the soup now. Charles is in the soup, everybody. Do you work for Venezuela? Or do you know anyone who does?
Just ask the harmless question. Do you work for Venezuela? And let's see what happens.
I don't mind like the odd Kindergarten Cop reference to our Schwarzenegger. Who is your daddy and what does he do? That might be fun. I mean, there's so many things you could ask that gentleman, but just go with what Charles is saying. You know who I am. Who are you?
Who are you, baby?
Charles Adams, ladies
and gentlemen. Who loves you? I love you. I love Canada. We can talk about the serious stuff, but let's just stay Canadian. Let's never take ourselves too seriously. And Jeff, I'm talking to you too.
Marlena, Bob, Tim, Alan, all of you guys. Charles Adler, go and download his podcast and get your fine podcast. Thanks, buddy. Great to see you again, as always. Mr. at Charles Adler on Twitter is where you can find him. It's like therapy for me talking to that gentleman. It is. Sells me down every time. It's funny because like when I first started doing some of the stuff, specifically working with Charles, what a blessing to have that man in my life. And when I first started working with Charles, I'd call him. I'm like, can you believe this? And he'd go, that's where this comes from. Distraction. Don't worry about it. I'm like, okay. You settle you down. And then you call him back like 4 minutes later. Like, they're doing it again. They said this. Somebody. He's like, yeah, well, it's the war on Christmas. It's like a 60-year-old strategy. Don't worry about it. And he calms you down. He has helped me see the forest through the political trees, and he can do the same for you. He and Kinsella do a great podcast every Friday. Go and download, subscribe to his podcast anywhere you get your fine podcast, the Charles Adler Podcast. He'll settle you down. Then he'll give you something to think about. Then he'll tell you the truth. Speaking of the truth, we are brought to you by our friends at factcheck.io. Factcheck.io, do you believe? This is fact-checking software extensions that not only help you battle misinformation and disinformation in real time, gives you the complete epistemology and origin of where that information came from, whether it's organic and inorganic. And right now, folks, factcheck.io. If you go to www.factcheck.io, you can sign up for the beta test of the program. This is software that does not exist. It is all proprietary, and it will be free. And you have a chance to actually navigate agency on social media and with the things that you read. Nothing like this exists. And the reason why, because the second it does, it gets snapped up. Because people don't want you to believe certain things. We want to give you facts. We want to give you truths, alternative sources, and we want to give you trust scores. That is exactly what Fact Check is. If you want to believe, go to factcheck.io today. Go there right now. We've got a limited space for, they've got a limited space for their sign up for their beta test. So you can beta test anything that you want to check to see if it's real. It is the ultimate tiebreaker. Factcheck.io. We're also brought to you by CanTorque, makers of rugged, hardworking torque wrenches in beautiful Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. God love the people in Edmonton. God love the people in Alberta. Hardest working individuals that make the most rugged, hardworking torque wrenches. 20 years of experience, tool rentals, calibration, service repairs, custom fabrication, distribution opportunities. CanTorque offers a range of services and products as well as distribution opportunities. That means work. They'll give you a job. If you know anything about the torque metal industry, or you know anything about bolting and solution needs, specifically when it comes to torque wrenches, these guys are the best. 20 years of unparalleled expertise, heavy industry around the world, forestry, machinery, nuclear, heavy equipment. It doesn't matter. These guys do it for every, including tunnel boring machines. Yeah, they're the only people that can service them in some places because they have a solution that works and other people don't. That's why they call themselves CanTorque. Everything in Canada by Canadians. Also brought to you by our friends at Muse on the Mic. The ladies, Emily and Riley, have a brand new podcast, owners of Muse Massage Spa in Toronto. Canada's premier body rub parlor. Go to musemassagespa.com for more details. These are educators, sexologists, and advocates, and their podcast is as such. It is outstanding. They take you to behind the scenes. They talk about what they can do for sex work industries. They talk about it being an industry that any woman or man should look at as a professional industry, and then safety, standards, all that stuff. But they also operate a hell of an operation out of Toronto. It's called Muse Massage Spa. Go there today, musemassagespa.com, and you can check them out on their podcast as well. They've got a Patreon version that gets very uncensored. You'll enjoy that. Muse on the Mic Patreon, Muse on the Mic anywhere you get your fine podcast, including at Cryer Media. Go to cryer.co today for that as well. And we're always brought to you by our friends at Gitch, any engineered for any level of performance as well as everyday life. Luxury boxer briefs. You'll love these. Boxer briefs, black, purple, red, orange. I prefer the black. Not a fan of the orange. A lot of people like orange Gitch. I'll wear the purple, dig the red, love the black. But you can get a four-pack or a single. And right now, you can get a free pair when you use promo code GITCH3 at checkout when you buy three or more. So the fourth is free. If it's free, it's for me. And you also get 15% off your entire purchase when you give them your email address. Go to edsfineimports.com today. Download all their information. Shop their massive clothing selection, clothing for men and boys. And make sure you use that promo code GITCH3 at checkout when you buy three or more pairs of underwear. These are the best underwear on the planet, by the way. Engineered for any level of performance. I wear them every day. You should too. All of my friends wear them. A bunch of our clients now wear them. And they are selling out. So make sure you go today. EdsFineImports.com. GITCH3 is your promo code. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks to Mr. Adler for joining us. Don't forget, everything we do is at Cryer Media, cryer.ca. Rate, subscribe, and review. YouTube, Cryer Media on YouTube, and Dean Blundell Show on YouTube. Follow us on Twitter, anywhere you get your fine social media posts, including Twitter, I think Instagram. Yeah, we're on Instagram, Facebook as well. Cryer Media, Dean Blundell. Have a nice day, everybody. We love you. Bye.
Hi, I'm Mercedes Nickel, four-time Winter Olympian and host of Dropping In, a podcast with Mercedes. This is a podcast where I interview a bunch of different people. I get the good, the bad, and the ugly, as well as I share my stories along the way. Now you can drop in at droppingin.com or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. I'll see you soon.
Kids, I'm your eager beaver.
And I'm Mr. Grizzly.
If you love politics
or hate politics,
then have we the perfect podcast for you.
The True North Eager Beaver.
Incisive political commentary.
We keep you up to date
and give you the political and media literacy you seek
to help you
cut through the bovine fecal matter.
Facts first.
Sound analysis.
Sometimes I growl.
Sometimes I sass.
We impart civics and build community.
And we share some laughs along the way.
Being informed
and engaged has never been more fabulous.
Or sexy. Catch us on the Dean Blundell Network or on our YouTube channel
or wherever you get your podcasts.
Because democracy is something you do.